Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Homestead Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to your favorite Saturday morning program, heard exclusively here on WEEB. I'm Steve Woodward, and I am joined by David Hensley. He's back, everybody.
Yes, after an extended 3-4 week vacation, I'm back.
Good morning, David.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, everyone.
I think you were actually part of a delegation with Marco Rubio doing something overseas. That's what I'm...
I spent 2 weeks in Ukraine, but I was not there as any part of the U.S. government.
Correct.
Yes.
Well, welcome back.
Well, thank you.
Is it lovely in Ukraine this time of year?
You know, traveling to Ukraine is always a good experience. The people are wonderful. The food is wonderful. It really kind of gives me an opportunity to detox from the crappy food that they feed us here and eat better quality food and just kind of get away from everything and see things from a faraway perspective. So I always come back invigorated with new energy and ideas and a bit healthier, too.
Well, there you go. Well, I'm glad that that you were. It's a long way to go for detox, but nonetheless, I'm glad you're here.
It was worth noting, though, that the first night I spent in Lviv was the heaviest bombardment Lviv has gotten since the Russian final invasion, and same thing with Kyiv. So the two nights I spent in each one of those towns were the heaviest bombardments they had received thus far in the war.
And you mentioned that rather casually. Was that harrowing or unsettling?
Well, in Lviv, I went down and took shelter in the spa of the hotel, drinking wine and eating assortment of things off the charcuterie board. Normally, I wouldn't have taken shelter, but, you know, with the wine and charcuterie board at the spa in the basement of the hotel, who could resist?
And which do you prefer, a bomb shelter in Ukraine or a school board meeting in Moore County?
That's an easy one, a bomb shelter in Ukraine. I don't really have to think about that.
I kind of hung that one over the plate, I guess. But
yes.
Anyway, we have a lot of potential things to crater here this morning on our weekly get together. We begin, as we always do, with identifying public enemy number one. And as always, the process of narrowing that down to one single entity or individual was very difficult. Many committee meetings were held. Many debates went deep into the night. We came up with somebody that is so easy to dislike. I mean, to your core, this guy is such a... Just a deeply, he's deranged, but he's also just not a good person. And, at one point was a fabulous actor. I mean, one of the best actors of my lifetime. Robert De Niro is our public enemy number one, but he's also one of the most, one of the number one most Trump deranged Americans living among us today. But it's not just Trump that he despises. It is everyone and anyone who would utter so much as a kind word about the president or any approval of his policies. And so Robert De Niro took to the studio of MSNBC to have a little, I guess you would call it, a therapy session with their panel. Play clip one.
Cannot let up on him because he is not going to leave the White House. He does not want to leave the White House. He will not leave the White House. Anybody thinks he'll do this, he'll do that. It's just deluding themselves, the Republicans most of all, because they know, but they're going along with it. It's a classic bully situation. We see it. And there's no other to face a bully. You have to face him and fight it out and back him off and back him down. That's the only way this is going to work. Yeah. The internet and so on. They're trying to they're used to seeing Trump do his stuff, and they talk and they listen, and that's the truth to them, because they don't listen to anything else except somewhere way out in the Midwest, somewhere out in the out west, in certain places, the rural places. That's the truth, because he gets the airtime. And I think that we need more airtime, just more push against, and not. I wish that you can't do this in some ways, but that the news media could find ways to kind of ignore or tamp down nonsense from Trump. It's just total nonsense. But those people out there listen to it and assume if it can be on the air and it's out there, it's the truth.
Mr. De Niro, we are in what is today, 19th? We are 19 days into the government shutdown. Picking up on what Jackie was asking about in terms of Democrats and messaging, the Democrats have not provided any votes for the CR to reopen the government because they have been hammering away at health care, both the extension of the Obamacare subsidies, but also the cuts to health care that are coming as a result of the big, beautiful law. How do you view the way Democrats are handling the messaging, but also handling the tactics behind this shutdown?
There's something I like Hakeem Jeffries. I like Schumer, Adam Schiff. They're all great, strong. I like what Letitia James is doing. She's saying this is it. I will not be taken down by this person. I am not afraid of him.
Wow. I'm afraid of Robert De Niro being loose on the streets of New York or elsewhere.
You know, it is. It's actually sad and pathetic, right? These people have Trump derangement syndrome. Think about how that started out. Like, who actually believes that Trump isn't going to leave at the end of his term? I mean, we have empirical evidence because he left at the end of his last term. Yeah. But these people actually believe this. This is mental illness on display. And what's crazy is people believe this. Look at the No Kings rally. And, you know, most of it are these people, you know, in their 70s and 80s, right, that just sit around and watch CNN, and they get brainwashed by watching MSNBC, CNN. But, you know, the only thing I can say about Mr. De Niro is sad and pathetic. I mean, he actually, you know, what's amazing is I think he believes what he's saying.
That is true. And in fact, the very people who are the most prone to being influenced by what they hear and see in the media are these No Kings mobs,
right?
Who believe that they're actually going to lose their Social Security and their medical coverage.
Right. They just finished wiring $25,000 to a Nigerian scammer. Then they show up to the No Kings rally. It's the same type of brainwashing and preying on the mentally frail.
You really can't make it up, I have to say. Now, we always like to identify the runner-up for the public enemy number one. Because, you know, why not? Why not do that? Especially because it's one of my favorite public enemies. We are going to talk a little bit later in the program about the masterful work by the North Carolina General Assembly in the past week, during which both the Senate and the House passed a revised congressional map, which will now give the Republicans an advantage in District 1 and in 11 of the 14 congressional districts. We now have 10 of the 14, and we're now going to have 11 under the new maps. And, of course, the left, their heads are exploding about this because it's not fair. It's gerrymandering. It's not adhering to the will of the people. When, in fact, for over 100 years prior to 2010, the Democrats controlled North Carolina and did this all day long.
Oh, my God. I remember when I was 12 years old in Oklahoma talking about how the Democrats who controlled Oklahoma at the time, they gerrymandered. There were congressional districts in Oklahoma. I remember this when I was a kid that were like the width at parts. They were the width of a two-lane highway.
Yeah,
and you've seen the maps right. online of when the Democrats did it. You know, a congressional district went, you know, all the way from Charlotte to Durham. Literally, there were congressional districts in North Carolina under the Democrats that would be part of Charlotte. And then it would snake its way up via various ways all the way to Durham. But then the Democrats, to include Tillis, act like no one ever gerrymandered until 2025.
So who do you think... was also upset about the redistricting by the Republicans in Raleigh. It would be the poster boy of the Republican in name only club, Tom Tillis. Play clip two.
Well, you know, the funny thing about redistricting in North Carolina is when I was in the minority, I supported independent redistricting and the Democrats were opposed to it. When I became speaker, I supported independent redistricting and the Democrats were all of a sudden in favor of it, but then my Republican majority were against it. So I'm one of the few people who's ever served in the legislature that's been consistent regardless of who held the gavels. So the independent redistricting question is something I think we should have, and I do believe that it should be subject to a political vote by the legislature. Their founding fathers envisioned that there would be a political decision process in redistricting, but that's not going to happen in today's political environment. The immediate matter of them considering redistricting, I think you just need to be careful. You know, North Carolina is a purple state, and right now we're at a 10-4 posture. That seems significant to me. If you go a little bit further, you could get surprised in an election cycle and not go your way.
A dummy manner.
So just be careful what you wish for.
Huh. We're a purple state? I'm not sure that that's an accurate statement.
Well, that's what actually the person running to replace him has said too, that North Carolina was head of the North Carolina GOP, is that North Carolina is a purple state. But let's talk about Tillis a bit. So, yeah, he said, well, when I was the Speaker of the House, you know, I still believe that we should have an independent third party, but, you know, the Republicans weren't for it. So, wait. Let's talk about the courage of his convictions. He was Speaker of the House, and he felt so strongly about this that he didn't make it happen. So first of all, I call BS on his, you know, conviction towards this. And then the other comment that Tom Tillis, related to Tom Beto, right, T-H-O-M, you know, he said that it couldn't happen in this politically, you know, that having a third party do it couldn't happen in this politically charged climate. You know what, Mr. Tillis? It's never happened anywhere in any state in 200 years history. So it hasn't happened on any timeline. But for some reason, he's highlighting this timeline, even though it didn't happen in the timeline when he was Speaker of the House. That guy is completely disingenuous. He has Trump derangement syndrome. And any opportunity he has in time to bash anything related to Trump, he doesn't hesitate to take advantage of it.
The correct answer, of course, would have been, I'm really excited about having another fellow Republican in the U.S. House of Representatives from North Carolina.
Right, but I don't think he is.
And call it a day.
Right.
But you're right, he isn't.
Yes.
Well,
or point out that, like, you know, there's seven New England states that have, or like 40% Republicans that don't have a single Republican congressman. Right?
Yeah.
He could. There's plenty of things he could have pointed out.
Well, he could find a lot of people that would nod in approval, like bobblehead dolls, about some of the rhino viewpoints that he takes. Were he to attend a future No Kings protest, there were, of course, many of them a week ago, and I'm not buying into the 7 million people participating. I think that's ridiculously overinflated. There was one on Morganton Road, going up the hill from 15501 toward Southern Pines, and I don't know, 50 people maybe were out there, and it was kind of funny. The pilot ran a big photo gallery of who was there. And literally, it looked like they had all escaped from Belle Meade. I mean, it was unbelievable.
Right. It's like they emptied out Belle Meade.
I mean, you could make it up. And maybe the pilot has more of a sense of humor than we give them credit for. I don't know. But anyway.
Look, this whole movement, I don't care whether there's no kings or whatever. All that's left of the Democratic Party are brainwashed old leftists, right? The liberals from, you know, the baby boomer liberals, and transgender, radical, militant transgender activists and anarchists. That's all that's left. You notice who wasn't president at the No Kings rally? There were no brown people, not one. Not one.
Very few, yeah, you're right.
So they've lost their coalition. All that's left of the Democrat Party are aging out liberal baby boomers, radical trans activists, and anarchists, like literal communist anarchists. That's it. Every sane person has left the Democrat Party or no longer votes to support them.
So we found one of these people who actually skews the demo a little bit. He looked to me like maybe somebody who was a college professor or some kind of younger guy, more like in his 40s, I would say. I believe they found him on the streets in Wilmington, and he was very upset about all things Trump and the potential for a greater America. Play clip 3.
Really say that we think Trump is really doing things that are fascist and wrong.
What is he doing fascist?
And so we
what
believe
is he doing?
In democracy.
What is he doing that's fascist?
Well, he's taking away people's rights.
What rights? Have people lost?
You know, I'm not being an interviewing. I'm not getting into your web of bullshit.
No. Yeah, like asking a question.
Like, why is he backing out? You got to debate. You got to have conversation. So
I'm telling you, the conversation.
So tell
is,
me I, what rights people are losing under Trump.
I think that he is not giving due process to Americans. And he's not giving due process even in the international waters.
Are you talking about people that came?
Trump is not following. Trump is not following congressional law and the law of the land. He's instead going to court. He goes to court and he acts first, goes to court, and then they say you can't do that. But he's already done it, and so that's
about,
a real
talking,
process.
Are you talking about illegal immigrants? Is that what you're talking about?
I'm talking about Americans, and I'm talking.
Are you talking about the drug smugglers coming over here and he's bombing them? You don't like that?
I don't think anybody's ever said that they've proven anybody to be a drug smuggler. I think people have just been bombed.
You think
out
they're
of
just
the
gonna bomb?
Yeah,
speedboat.
Because he's trying to destabilize Venezuela.
A regime
anyways,
change.
Anyways. I'm not going to spend my day with you because you're not worth it for me.
Oh.
But this is worth it for me.
All right, this is
and
funny.
I'm really
yeah, let's go chant. Let's go chant some hate. Hey,
I'm not
we
you.
Hate
Thank
Trump.
You very much.
We hate Trump.
Well, that guy, I think, you know, if you want to know how these people are wired, I think he gave you a window into that. He obviously was incapable of answering a pointed question as to why he was standing there.
They're all that way.
Yeah.
They're all, if you want to shut a liberal up online, they rant and rave, oh, blah, 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 and go, oh, okay, name two things that Trump has done that you said, and they just can never respond. They come back and call you a fascist, and that's it. They can never answer questions about, you know, to support their positions, ever.
You know, locally, I think the pilot newspaper needs to change the name of its letters to the editor section. It's entitled The Public Speaking. It really ought to be recast as The Public Shrieking, because these days all the pilot does is run letters by Trump derangement people.
Yeah.
And it's, you wouldn't think there were any local issues capturing anybody's attention or getting their priorities in their everyday lives. One gentleman in the pilot writes that he and a friend were discussing the, quote, continuing cascade of destruction resulting from Donald Trump's assault on our culture. That's interesting. And our Constitution.
Wait a minute. Donald Trump, who's trying to get rid of all the foreign invaders, is having a negative effect on our culture?
Yeah.
I think removing the foreign invaders is like returning our culture and defending our culture.
This gentleman Mr. McAllister of Pinehurst goes on to...
Is he running for city council? He'd fit right in with the Bolsheviks that are running for the Pinehurst City Council.
He goes on to complain that Trump's worst transgression derives from his, quote, habit of constant lying. But he makes no... He does not cite one example of a lie that Trump has recently uttered.
They can't.
And then, of course, he concludes that Trump lacks moral virtue. Now, I seem to recall that that the whole legacy of the Biden presidency and vice presidency was, let's see, scamming money out of Ukraine and China, protecting his deadbeat crackhead son. What else? Let's see, fabricating January 6th as a as some kind of an insurrection. And yet,
debasing our currency 30% by passing the $1 trillion infrastructure improvement bill. And by the way, our roads are no better because all that $1 trillion went to Stacey Abrams and green energy companies and just nonsense. And when they did that $1 trillion on top of the COVID $1 trillion, that's what caused our inflation. And so he devalued. He took, if you had savings, right, cash, if you had cash or cash equivalents, Biden and the Democrats took 30% of your cash and cash equivalents.
But oh, what virtue the man has. And
yes. And don't forget the top secret documents in a box next to his Corvette in his garage.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. There's another one. But the virtuous one is any Democrat, but Trump lacks it entirely. And I should point out that one of the gentlemen running for Pinehurst Village Council in 2021 rushed to social media after Biden had been elected president, allegedly, to say that the country was now back in good hands.
Yes, that's the Bolshevik I was referring to. What's the Bolshevik's name?
Kevin Fitzpatrick.
Do not vote for Fitzpatrick. He is a Biden supporter. The evidence is online. Just take my word for it.
It was
just
gushing.
Cross out Fitzpatrick. Cross out son of Patrick. Do not vote for son of Patrick.
It was a gushing endorsement of this ill-qualified man. And then there was also, of course, another letter in the public shrieking section describing the No Kings gathering in Southern Pines as one that would appeal to Republicans, Democrats, and Independents because they're all against authoritarian excesses and overreaching immigration arrests. You mean deporting illegal immigrants who came into our country?
Most of them violent felons. Yeah, that's horrible.
Who have proven that they are capable.
Yeah, what's this person's name?
This would be, I believe she may have once been a council member, Ellie Collins of Southern Pines.
Oh, that was my opponent for the school board.
There
she's like, she's like the hardest of hardcore lefties. She's like left of Stalin.
And you steamrolled through that election, as I recall.
So if I could just humbly remind everyone, not only did I beat the Democrat, but I beat the two empty skirt Republicans that Tom Beto and the boys ran against me. So not only did I curb stomp the two empty suit Republicans, I curb stomp the Democrat. I beat three people in one election.
And a little later in the show, we're going to talk about why that was a blessing to this community when we talk about the latest school board shenanigans. Anyway, Indivisible More, writes Ms. Collins, is a grassroots, nonpartisan, pro-America organization. Well, let me dispute that.
Nonpartisan.
Let me dispute that by pointing out what is actually behind the so-called No Kings. It is, in fact, it's described this way by a very very capable investigative reporter. It is part of the latest orchestrated campaign by Indivisible, which is a network built by former congressional staffers and funded through George Soros' Open Society empire.
Oh, sounds impartial so far.
It goes all the way back, believe it or not, to 2016 when Trump was first elected and inaugurated. Its kingpins are two miserable little zombies named Leah Greenberg and Ezra Levin. Mm-hmm. It began as a viral Google Doc that promised to teach progressives how to resist Donald Trump. At first glance, they
sounds insurrection-y to me.
At first glance, this reporter writes, the No Kings movement appears to be a grassroots outpouring against the idea of unchecked power. Its slogans, hashtags, and glossy materials suggest a decentralized coalition of concerned citizens. Yet, a closer look at its architecture reveals a well-oiled political machine operating with precision and discipline that can only substantial institutional backing can provide. Behind the chants of no one is above the law lies a coordinated effort to delegitimize the duly elected president and extend the influence of an elite ideological class that sees itself as the guardian of democracy.
Sounds just like insurrectionist Bolsheviks.
It does.
That's exactly what they said in 1917 Russia.
And by the way, if you think these people are just merely well-funded, organized, and determined, I think they're a little more dangerous than that. During the No Kings protest...
No kidding. They tried to kill Trump twice, and they assassinated Charlie Kirk. I mean...
Yes, they did. And they're not done yet. According to flyers that were distributed during the No Kings gathering in Ann Arbor, Michigan, a week ago, the document indicated that everything comes to a head, and we will draw the terms, we arrange the time and date, your people and our people, we have demands. In no uncertain terms, they demanded the abolishment of the Supreme Court, I'm not kidding, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and the Department of Homeland Security. It concluded with a stark warning that if demands are ignored, quote, disorder will be without parallel in modern times, end quote.
Well, okay, so let's take a look at this threat. Disorder will be unparalleled in modern times. So you had the Bolsheviks in 1917. You had the brown shirts who were socialist in Germany in the 1930s and 40s. You had Chairman Mao who killed, what, 20, 30 million people? That was certainly unprecedented scale, right? Before that, you had Stalin, who killed easily 10, 15. He starved all of Ukraine to death, right? You had Hugo Chavez. You got Castro. You got Pol Pot. I mean, that is what the communists and socialists are, anarchists, and they've always used violence to include assassination to achieve their political means. History would dictate that we need to take that seriously, and that's what Trump is doing.
Yes, so you know, freely ignore these sort of frivolous No Kings protests as they're marching up and down Morganton Road, but do not ignore what is at the heart of what they're doing.
The people behind it.
Exactly.
The kingpins.
Listen
the
to this little smug Ezra Levin. Play clip four.
So we've launched something tonight called the No Kings Alliance, which is an alliance of all of these groups working together all around the country in an effort to produce that kind of rapid response we need to change the conditions on the ground, because we don't want this to be the Trump era. The Trump era is over. This is the No Kings era, and this regime is just operating in it temporarily while we build up the strength necessary to usher in this new era of reform.
Reform, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So they don't want
Anarchy.
A Trump. So they don't want a Trump era. Remember when they were all telling us that we refused to accept the results of an election? Now that's in spite of, you know, Al Gore and the Democrats refusing to accept the results of the Bush election. That's in spite of Hillary Clinton refusing to accept the 2016 elections. That's in spite of Stacey Abrams still insisting she's the governor of Georgia, right? But they want to deny the Trump election because there shouldn't be a Trump era. These people, as I've said this my whole life, you cannot be a leftist without being a hypocrite.
And I do want to point out that, you know, we live in a time where everything is about the presidency and the White House and Donald Trump, and Trump did this and Trump did that. But we still have a somewhat functional Congress in Washington, D.C. I know that's, I say somewhat because obviously things like this shutdown and the inability to pass a budget and do anything about our ticking time bomb, of debt, those are problems that need to be addressed. But I will say that up the road in Raleigh, this past week, both the House and the Senate did its job by taking the opportunity to redraw the congressional district map, which will ultimately make District 1 a Republican-leaning, if not full-blown Republican district, even as it makes the 3rd congressional district maybe a little bit more balanced. But, you know, you tweak one to win another, I guess, is the way that works. Of course, the Democrats' heads were exploding in Raleigh, other than those that have already been are smoldering from previous explosions. But there are not a lot of heads left to explode up
there. I'm surprised they have any brain cells to, like, cause friction to cause their heads to explode. I'm surprised they learned they have active brain cells.
But it was something that needed to be done. It will now give Republicans presumably 11 of the 14 congressional seats, and that's a good thing. The majority leader up there, Representative Brendan Jones, weighed in with his take on it. Play clip 5.
So to the national left, I'm sorry your favorite governor in Sacramento miscalculated. Proposition 50 has backfired. Republican-led states are here to make sure that one man does not predetermine the controls of Congress. North Carolina will not be lectured, will not be bullied, and will not be sued into submission. We will not let outsiders tell us how to govern, and we will never apologize for doing exactly what the people of this state has elected us to do. We did our job transparently, lawfully, and unapologetically. And if that offends the left, so be it. Because what we're defending here today is not just a map. It's the principle that stops the deck from being stacked against us. It's the principle that our delegation in Congress will advocate for the true beliefs of North Carolinians. And it is a fact that we will send one more Republican to Congress from this great state. You can be mad about redistricting all you want to, but you need to look in the mirror and ask yourself what got us here. And I think then you'll begin to realize just how bad the left messed up. So thanks for poking that bear, giving us the playbook. And for that, we'll be sending another strong conservative to Washington to represent this great state.
How about that? That's good stuff.
So, as you know, I rarely go down tangents and rabbit holes, but with your permission, can I go on a tangent on this?
I think you should.
So, part of the reason this is happening is because Phil Berger, you know, I've been very critical of Phil Berger. Generally, you know, our General Assembly is doing some great things. The problem is they had crappy leadership under, get rid of Phil Berger, and the state party and the North Carolina General Assembly will fix itself if you get rid of him and his mafia. But here's the thing about Berger. The reason this is happening is because Berger's in the political fight of his life. He may not get reelected, and he's Senate Majority Leader, so he's sucking up and trying to get close to Trump. You know, he's like, I'm doing this for Trump, and he's reposting Trump stuff and this and that. But you know what? So he's really doing this to tie, because, you know, Trump wants this and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But you know what's interesting? If you pay close attention to Berger's post where he's really trying to tie himself to Trump because he thinks that'll get him reelected, there are no pictures of him and Trump together. There's not one. He's posted pictures of those two photoshopped together. I'm supporting Trump. And his message for the last week has been, I'm supporting Trump. I'm supporting Trump's agenda. But the true tell that he really doesn't support Trump is that there's no pictures of him with Trump. And if he wanted a picture with Trump previous to this, that would have happened. And if Trump wanted a picture with him prior to this, this would have happened. There are no pictures of Berger with Trump. He is trying to fool the American people. Just like Calcutt fooled the Moore County people, acting like she was, you know, somewhat moderate, and she's not. Phil Berger is trying to fool his voters into thinking that he cares about anything other than himself.
You're referring to school board chair Robin Calcutt, and we'll talk about her a little later in the program. Now, I will say that you mentioned, you know, that Berger is obviously trying to maybe suck up a little bit to
he's trying
Trump.
To get an endorsement. He hasn't gotten an endorsement yet either.
And, you know, I'm the other night I had an opportunity to attend a meeting of a local Republican precinct in which the invited guest and speaker is a gentleman named Don Brown. Now, many of you may just be getting to sort of know who he is. He is a candidate for the U.S. Senate seat being vacated by Tom Tillis. Of course, we all know that the perceived front runner in that in this primary is none other than Michael Whatley, who does have the endorsement of Donald Trump, who ran the Republican National Committee in 2024 and coordinated the highly successful convention in Milwaukee, for which he deserves credit. But I'm seeing shades all over again of the Mark Robinson for governor race in 24, when the establishment told us and convinced Trump that Robinson was the man for governor, totally ignoring the virtues and the qualifications of our state treasurer, Dale Falwell, who I think would have been an excellent gubernatorial candidate had he been able to get through the primary. He did not. And now we have this scenario where you've got a very accomplished candidate in Don Brown, a native son of Eastern North Carolina, the author of 15 books, a former Navy JAG officer, so therefore an attorney. He has successfully defended a couple of these improperly detained and jailed January 6th American patriots. And maybe that makes him a little toxic for the establishment. I don't know. But Don Brown has core principles that we would embrace, and he should get your attention as we enter the primary next year for this U.S. Senate race. Play that clip.
First off, I'm going to push what I call a Deep State Reduction Act. What would that mean? Deep State Reduction Act. Somebody said it should be the Deep State Elimination Act. I think that's better, Gail. But what that would mean is this, that we would eliminate two-thirds of all non-military federal employees over a 10-year period. That should be pretty easy to do because you retire most of them out. Eliminate two-thirds, apply that savings to the debt. And then this is crucial. Eliminate at least two-thirds of all federal agencies. Get rid of them. If you cannot identify these agencies, there are about 400 agencies or more, 3.2 million federal employees. Eliminate those agencies and apply that to national debt. I'm going to pick on our Republican Congress. Let me just say this first. The Democrat Congresses, at least in the last 150 years, have been absolute disasters. And on three separate historical occasions, they have exploded the deep state. You go back to World War II, or just before that, with the Great Society, Lyndon Baines Johnson, they blew up the federal government with all these agencies. Then comes, I said Lyndon Baines Johnson, I meant Franklin Roosevelt, but then comes Lyndon Johnson in 64 and 65 with the Great Society. So the New Deal is in the 30s and 40s, the Great Society is under Johnson, two huge explosions of the federal government, and then comes Obamacare, which is an absolute takeover of the healthcare industry. They call it the Astronomical Cost Act. I call it the Astronomical Cost Act. They call it the Affordable Care Act. But here's the problem. The problem is while Democrat socialism has built the problem that we have in Washington, D.C., our Republican Congresses have been weak. I'm going to level with you. We've not fought to take this deep state down, and we've got to do it. Let me just give you an example. President Trump has been brilliant with his use of the executive order. When he came in, this time on January 20th, he came in rocking and rolling, ready to go. Has anybody ever seen like that? I mean, one order after the other, signing one after the other. And he signed executive orders to defang the Department of Education, for example. You look at the Department of Education. Carter rammed it down our throats just before Reagan came in. Look what's happened to our scores since that happened, vis-a-vis the Asian, because they dropped. It's been nothing really but a department of indoctrination, which they try to finish this off with Common Core. But Trump wants it gone. We have a Republican Congress, and we still have a Department of Education. Yeah. The Republican Congress should have killed and eliminated the Department of Education within days of President Trump being sworn in. I will fight to do that. We've got to take these agencies out. We've got to wage war on the floor of the Congress to do it. Because, see, under our constitutional scheme, 7 Articles, 27 Amendments, Article 1 creates the Congress. Our Congress is supposed to work like a North Carolina General Assembly. Now, when this poor girl got murdered in Charlotte the other day on that light rail train, The General Assembly responded with the Remus Law. They responded. The General Assembly runs North Carolina. The Congress is supposed to run the country, and only the Congress can get us out of the mess they've got us in.
So I think that's a good little window into Don Brown, and I would encourage you to continue to follow his campaign. And of course, when we get past the Christmas season and people start focusing on the primaries, you'll hear a lot more about him and Whatley, and I'm sure they'll be debating and all those things. But you know, he mentioned the deep state and the paralysis of the lawmakers, and we have that very condition affecting us here in Moore County on our Board of Education, which Mr. Hensley is quite painfully aware of.
Painfully aware. In fact, didn't we just discuss that, like, you know, a bomb shelter in Lviv is preferable to a school board meeting?
Especially with food and wine, yeah, with cheese and wine. But the latest...
And not a taxpayer expense, by the way. Not provided by educational funds.
Well, that is an important and often overlooked point. But, you know, lately they've been talking on the board about a very important topic. I mean, I'm glad they're talking about it. And I hope it continues to be...
they're talking about it because I forced them to talk about it.
On the table, yeah. So we have elementary schools in this county which have no security whatsoever, armed or unarmed.
We have 13 schools that have no armed total, officers. Yeah.
So the genesis of this was that... The issue came to the fore, Mr. Hensley leading it, and then a committee is formed to, which is always means that they're not serious about it, a committee is formed to review the options for improving security. He is excluded from the committee, and then take it from there. Where are we now?
Yeah, so, you know, they 2 months ago at a work session in, September, they just sprung out of nowhere, hey, we're going to hire this private security firm to do unarmed guards for 5 or 6 of our elementary schools. And they presented that, you know, with no notice. It was on the agenda, so we got 72 hours notice. We showed up a work session, and they expect us to rubber stamp it and, you know, approve it the next week. And, you know, I sat there and listened to the presentation, and I asked some questions. This was during the work session. I asked, for example, you know, the minimum qualifications for these unarmed security guards were high school diploma. That's it. And able to lift heavy weight and stand on their feet. There were other requirements that were preferred but not required. So I pointed out that there was no requirement for law enforcement, you know, previous law enforcement experience. I asked the company if they had previous experience providing unarmed guards or school security, and the answer to both was no. So I just asked some obvious questions that any thinking person or certainly businessman would ask. So, you know, we got through that meeting, and it was on the business agenda for the following meeting. That would be the 8 September meeting, right? So it was on the agenda, and in the meantime, the public got upset about it. You know, the public who learns, like, we don't want unarmed guards, and we don't want unarmed guards with no law enforcement experience. And by the way, why are we doing a no bid contract to this company that has zero experience? And you know, it just, there were just questions, and the public wanted answers. And a lot of the public showed up at the 8th September meeting, and they were going to speak out. Well, at the start of the meeting, Chair Calcutt, before we approved the agenda, she unilaterally removed it from the agenda and referred it to a committee, an ad hoc committee that she appointed right there. The committee was herself, Davis, and Benway. You'll notice that I wasn't on the committee. Pauline wasn't on the committee. Neither was Amy Dahl or Steve Johnson. Well, I objected to the composition of the committee because it is the chair's responsibility to put the most qualified people on the committee, not the people who ideologically align with her or rubber stampers. And I pointed out, by the way, I posted all this on the Hensley School Board page last night. So I pointed
Facebook page.
Yes. What'd I say?
No, you didn't say what page.
Yeah, Hensley School Board Facebook page. And so I pointed out, hey, I've been championing this for 5 years, right? My company is a major supplier of equipment to law enforcement agencies and federal agencies. So I just have a lot of experience with law enforcement. And also I pointed out, I did all this in open session. I pointed out, hey, my company was the major sponsor of the FBI National Academy Associates Alumni Association. That is all the state and local law enforcement people that have attended the FBI Academy. They have a nationwide association. My company was a sponsor of that. And I used for a couple of years, I went to many of their state-level retrainers, you know, Oklahoma, Texas, South Carolina, Virginia. Every year they have retrainers for these officers that have gone to this school. And I've sat through 12 or 13, no kidding, seminars on school security and SROs that were presented not by some, you know, bozo down the road, but presented by the leading experts on school security, right? So I have experience in this, and I said I should be on that committee. So undaunted, and then I asked, what are the qualifications of the people that you have put on there? And Calcutt ignored that question because the qualifications were rubber stampers. And she proceeded with her rubber stamp committee. And at that time, I said, that's a sham committee. This is a sham committee, and I object to it. By the way, the people who should really be unhappy about this is Amy Dahl and Steve Johnson. And let me tell you why. You may ask, you know, it's pretty.
I should insert two of the newest school board members elected, yes, just last year.
Right, right. They should be unhappy about this, and here's why. Look, she obviously wasn't going to put me on the committee because I would ask questions, right? And Pauline would ask questions, right? But here's why didn't she put Amy Dahl or Steve Johnson on it? It's because, you know, they were separating from her on this issue, you know, and both Steve Johnson and Amy Dahl expressed concerns about unarmed security, and they had expressed, each of them expressed, that they thought that perhaps the best solution was putting it under the control of the sheriff, like is done in 99% 113 other school districts in North Carolina. So Calcutt and whoever is advising her intentionally set up this sham committee. I said it was a sham committee, and it proved to be a sham committee. So that happened. So she formed this committee. She referred it to a committee which was specifically formed to study this contract and make a recommendation. That's why she formed the committee. The committee met on 13 September. Right. And they met and they discussed stuff, but they did not in any way, shape, or form discuss the particular. They didn't discuss this contract at all. They didn't discuss the particulars of it. They didn't discuss the merit of it. They didn't discuss the requirements of it. Instead, they didn't discuss it at all. And they voted 3-0 to put it on the action agenda for the 13 October meeting with their approval, even though they didn't discuss it. So what exactly did this sham committee do? Well, I'll tell you what they didn't do. They didn't discuss, not one of them thought, you know, maybe we should make previous law enforcement experience a requirement for these security guards. Didn't bring it up. Didn't occur to any of them. They didn't think to say, maybe, you know, there's online training programs for SROs. I've heard for 5 years, oh, SROs are highly specialized. They had to be trained because they're around our kids. Not one of those people on that sham committee thought, maybe we should make like an online 12-hour course for SROs a requirement. Not one of them thought, you know, maybe we should make trauma medical training and certification a requirement for these SROs. Not one of them asked the board attorney about potential liability of the district for hiring unarmed security guards from a company that had no prior experience in doing this. Not one of them asked, hey, could we see the past performance references for this provider to know who we're hiring? Not one of them thought to look at and consider alternative companies. You know, so what they ended up doing is, rather than actually look at the contract, which, by the way, is a no bid, they were going to, they recommended the award of a $344,000 contract, no bid contract, to a company that had no experience providing unarmed security guards or working on schools. That's why it was a sham committee. Calcutt and whoever's advising advising her specifically put three members on that board who they knew would ask no questions, and they would just vote the way that they wanted them to vote. And that's why I called it a sham committee, and that's exactly what they did. And even after I called them a sham committee, they were still a sham committee.
Yeah.
I mean, if someone, like if I set up a sham committee, right, and someone said, that's a sham committee, I would at least do something to make it look like it wasn't a sham committee, but they didn't even bother to do that. They literally did not discuss the contract, which was the purpose for the alleged committee.
And, you know, we're not talking about, you know, like the color of the drapes in the break room or whether or not...
We're talking about the security of our faculty, staff, and students.
Yeah, we're not talking about whether or not the sidewalks need to be replaced or there needs to be a new landscaping in front of the schools. We're talking about the most essential element of operating a public school
in today's environment.
The safety and security of all inside those buildings.
Not one question, not one suggestion, not one, hey, what about this? Or, hey, I just noticed that we're paying $66,500 per year for an unarmed security office whose only real requirement is they're a high school graduate. I just noticed that's more than what we pay for a sworn law enforcement officer who joins our SROs. Not one person pointed out that we're paying 50% more for these unarmed high school graduates, like 40% more than what we pay for a new SRO. That's why I called it a sham committee, and I'll be damned if they weren't a sham committee.
What do you know?
Yeah.
And then, of course, you had a very recent meeting, I believe, and I was reading in the report about it in the pilot.
Oh, yeah. So
talking about hiring perhaps off-duty law enforcement from surrounding communities.
That's a sham argument that they set up. That's just, now they're just grasping at straws. But let's talk about the 13 October meeting. So they recommended it be put directly on the agenda of the business meeting, completely bypassing the work session. How many times have they said, we have to have things in the work session so we can thoroughly discuss and debate them? Then, of course, they don't allow. But they completely bypassed the discussion and debate in the work session. That was intentional because they don't want any, they tried to pass this with no input or discussion, none, zip. It wasn't allowed by CalCut or whoever's advising her. So it's on the 13 October agenda, and CalCut all of a sudden starts enforcing the 10-minute rule. Everybody gets 10 minutes on this topic. You get 10 minutes, no more. You can't have a discussion and debate. I mean, there were legitimate questions that I just outlined, and had they addressed those in the committee, like if I was on that committee, we would have addressed those in committee, and they would have been addressed, they would have been discussed, and we would have had a stronger proposal that maybe made sense. But since she bypassed that, I had questions in the 13 October meeting, but she wouldn't allow it. So it just took me, I spent 8 minutes all I could do was talk as fast as I could and talk about the problems with this contract. Then I started making motions. The first motion I made was to amend the contract to provide unarmed security guards for school board meetings, because we had two armed security guards there. And I also pointed out that the SROs work on comp time. So if two cops spend, you know, a total of 8 man hours there, that's 8 man hours and we don't have police. So I made a motion to amend that we provide unarmed guards for the school board meetings so the SROs can go back to their schools, right? That failed. Then I made a motion to make law enforcement experience required. That passed, and the only person who voted against that was CalCut. All of a sudden, when we started making the requirements for these unarmed security guards more stringent, the superintendent called a recess, went out, talked with the attorney, and came back in and withdrew the motion. Isn't that a trend where we start increasing requirements and the central office all of a sudden, you know, isn't interested?
It sounds to me like things are upside down. And it's still a serious problem, and it needs to be resolved. So I would hate to think the legacy of this school board is that it's going to be that we left our schools vulnerable until one day we found out
the answer is turn it over to the sheriff's department, just like Lee County. Lee County and adjoining counties, the security's all provided by the sheriff's department. And Lee County has 100% coverage of all their schools, compliment of the sheriff.
Well, we'll talk about this more going forward. We'd like to thank everybody for joining us again this week on your favorite program on Saturday morning. We'd like to thank our sponsor, The Marketplace Restaurant and Catering. We'd like to remind you that next week, our guest will be Lydia Bosch, who is a candidate for Pinehurst Village Council. On next week's big show, we like to call it Taking Aim.